Susie from MERP. I'm here with Rich Ward from Fozzy. Hello.
Hey, Susie. Nice to see you again.
You too. The video for Judas has had over 5 million views. What do you attribute to its success?
I think it's a culmination of lots of things. It's always a perfect storm, right, when you have something that seems to resonate. And I think, you know, in the past, it all comes down to timing. So Chris just came off a great run in the WWE where he was a good guy for once instead of coming off as a bad guy. We had the right song with the right message and the right vocal performance for Chris, because I think a lot of times a song really does come down to, can the artist connect with the lyric and can you tell that story? And does that story communicate with other people? And I think the song is great, but I also think it's how we are able to kind of translate that story. And I also think it's the right video. It's a perfect storm of great accidents and great timing.
Did you write it specifically for the WWE NXT takeover, or did it just happen?
No, they chose it after it was already written and recorded. I guess Chris played it for Triple H, and Triple H really liked it and said, hey, would you be okay with using it as a pay-per-view theme?
So you have Paul back on bass. You happy to have him back?
Of course. Paul, it's always been Paul's gig, and we knew when Paul joined the band that he was already in another couple of bands and that it was going to be hard juggling schedules, and we juggled schedules, and then he was gone for a little over a year, and we're just so happy he's back.
That's what I was going to ask you. With Chris's schedule with the WWE, you've got Stuck Mojo and Fozzy. Is it hard to balance everything?
No, because we've all decided to prioritize Fozzy so that when we find out what Chris's schedule is, then we work around that. It works out easier than us trying to get Chris to work Vince McMahon around Stuck Mojo. It's a little less convenient to work that way. So it really is just about, we've had the same manager for both bands, same record company, and so we're really able to kind of get all of the important people together to kind of work on making sure that the transitions are smooth and that we don't let one of the bands suffer.
Any other videos in the works besides Judas?
We're going to do another one late summer for an early fall release. The album comes out September the 22nd, so the idea is to have another video about a month earlier.
It's still on schedule for September?
Yes.
So with touring a lot, are you still a fan of music?
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm still the biggest music fan, but it's so funny that I go through phases of what kind of music I'm a fan of at the time. Right now I'm in like a big 70s funk rock and 70s soft rock phase. So I'm way into Toto and the Doobie Brothers and Parliament Funkadelic and Lakeside and Steely Dan and Lionel Commodores. And, and then I'll go into my Cannibal Corpse and Death Angel and Morbid Angel phase. And I just love all music, but it's funny how I guess it's kind of like, it's seasonal for me. Just like there are times where I watch nothing but horror movies, and then there's times that I want to watch nothing but, like, comedies. So I'm in a big 70s kick right now.
I've been listening to Bread.
Yeah, I love Bread.
Is there any genre of music you don't like?
I'm not a big fan of, like, new R&B. You know, the kind of milking 20,000 notes out of one word. The, oh, yeah. You know, I liked it when Stevie Wonder did it, but I don't like the modern interpretation of, like, new R&B. And I'm not a big reggae fan either. It's something I never... since I never was like a big into weed culture, if you don't smoke, then reggae's not your thing. Because, or if you're not into like beach or island culture. So I live inland, I don't live near water, and I don't smoke a lot of weed, so then that puts reggae outside of my circle of trust.
So I don't know your situation. If you do have kids, or if you did have kids, if they wanted to be a musician and to travel in your steps, would you encourage it or discourage it?
I don't have kids, and I wouldn't encourage or discourage either way. I would only find out whatever their interests are and do my best to support it. I found out the hard way that when my parents told me, don't do music, the more they pushed, the more I dug in. And because I think it's just the rebellious nature of youth, right? And when someone of authority tells you, you can't do that, or there's a million and one chance that you'll ever be in a successful band, or you'll ever... And it was actually good motivation that so many people told me that you can't do it. The other side of it is that the average person that says, hey, I'd love to make music for a living, I would tell them, how about just make music because you love it? And if you make money from it, that's a bonus. But if you go into it because you're chasing money and fame, then usually fall is harder, because your motives aren't pure. So if the idea is, I love Judas Priest, I love Black Sabbath and the Scorpions, and I want to learn to be like them. When I was a kid, I learned all those records. I learned how to play Highway to Hell and Back in Black, and For Those About to Rock. I because I loved it. And then I found a group of guys that I enjoyed making music with, and then we played a pool party, and I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And then we started playing high school dances, and then... 3 years later, I'm in an original rock band writing songs, and we have a small fan base, and it was all organic. It was never, I want to be famous. It was always just the quest of playing music that I found that I was passionate about, and doing it with people that I felt like playing with them made me better. So that's what any group should be, right? Like, not one great guitar player and a great drummer, but a guitar player and a drummer who play great together. It's all about chemistry, and I've been lucky that I've kind of found that a lot in my career. So I would tell people, if I had a kid, I would say, do whatever you love, but don't do it for money. Find a really good trade like welding that you can make money at. And then if your band or your acting career or your art takes off, awesome, go do it. But a lot of times art and making money while doing it can be at odds with each other, because then they both require sacrifice. And I don't think art should be sacrificed at its purest form. Later, when you have a record company and a road crew and a booking agent and a business manager, there's a lot of mouths to feed, and then you do have to make decisions that are based on money. Not necessarily songwriting, but you have to book the right shows, and yet there's a lot of then there's a cross section how art and the business work. But when you start off, you should never think about the money. Yeah, get a job in a movie theater.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, just how excited I am to be back in the Northwest. I love it here. I went to Jimi Hendrix's grave today, which was super cool. He was my first, like, hero as a kid. I remember when I was 12 years old, I made a handmade sign that says, no entrance unless you love Jimi Hendrix. Like, I put it on my door at home. Because he was the first guy because growing up, there are a lot of musicians that I acknowledged were great players, but Jimi was the first guy who was the total package. The player, the artist, the entertainer, like almost like a spiritual guru. Like, he had it all, and ever since then I've always, like, tried to decide what was it about Hendrix that made him special, because he was entertaining and performing, but it was just part of who he was. And I always tried to make sure that I wasn't trying to play a character, that I was doing what Hendrix did, and my heroes like Angus Young, who their characters Angus is the schoolboy. You know, he is the little crazy little guy, and I've always decided that I was never going to pretend to be Eddie Van Halen. I was going to be Rich Ward and not play it like I was pretending to be Prince or Jimi Hendrix, because those guys were successful because they were who they were, and people knew they were real artists. So, yeah, so it was really cool to see that.
I haven't been up there to see it, but with Chris Cornell dying, did you know there's actually a place here in Seattle called the Soundgarden?
No, I didn't know that.
And I just found it out, too. They have these tubes that when the wind blows through, it makes sound.
Oh, wow.
And so when he died, I don't know if it was on his death date or when he was laid to rest, they turned it off, so it was silent. But I want to see that, so you should see that next
Very
time.
Cool. Yeah, I Soundgarden was super influential band. That Bad Motorfinger, when it came out in Atlanta, a lot of the music, Atlanta was a little behind. Like, we were still into hair metal well into the early 90s. Like, it was still really popular. And there were other areas like New York and Seattle and in Southern California that really were ahead of the curve, and there were new bands trying new things. And I remember, because I never Bad Motorfinger was the first Soundgarden record I heard. For whatever reason, the earlier material just never crossed my ears. And I just remember hearing Outshined or seeing it on MTV and thinking, oh yeah, things are going to change now, because all of a sudden now we had a band that was, you know, a lot of the grunge bands had more in common with alternative music, whereas Soundgarden was like more of a heavy band that had its roots in the grunge movement, but they spoke to metal guys because they also had their roots in Black Sabbath. So for a guy like me who was a metal guy but was always searching for new things, like, Nirvana didn't really speak to me because it was a little more, like I said, alternative. Screaming Trees, all those bands weren't my thing. And I remember Soundgarden was one of those bands because all the metal guys loved them. Girls loved them. They spoke to everybody. And they changed everything. Yeah, I never met Chris. So we all get caught up in the personalities of people, but we don't know them. I don't pretend to, like, when Prince died, everyone was so sad. It was like, and I was sad because I loved his music, but I don't know him. You know what I mean? These people are just like the rest of us, right? They're, and matter of fact, the successful people that are great artists, usually it's a product of like them being kind of broken, right? Like, if you could tell these sad stories, it's because they're sad stories to tell. And yeah, which is why all of these people like Michael Jackson and, you know, and the greats, they're all good at Elvis, you know, Jim Morrison, because they could communicate in a way that people who had great upbringings and perfect lives can't tell those stories. I remember Michael Sweet from Stryper, who I love, tweeted one time that he wished that rock stars were more responsible in their actions, and that were a little better ambassadors. It's like they would set better examples. But and I just responded, we don't. They'll never be ambassadors, because Boy Scouts don't make good rock stars. Axl Rose shows up 5 hours late for shows because he's crazy, right? And it's the crazy that makes him Axl Rose, and it makes all of us love him. And we have to accept these broken people as they are, because it's that broken stuff that makes the best art.
Excellent answer. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes,
we can't wait
you.
To see you again.
Yay, thank you.